You beat those stamp Nazis with good old-fashioned American complaining.
Homer, if it weren't for you, we'd be at the mercy of weekend philatelists.
You know, why didn't you just say stamp collectors?
Because I'm tired of dumbing myself down for you.
Live from the Stamp Show Here Today Infotainment Complex, this is the award-winning Stamp Show Here Today. If you can dream it, we can collect it. Brought to you by the Southern Nevada Philatelic Research Center, a nonprofit 501c3 corporation for the advancement of philately. You can support this Suitless Tosh by joining the Stamp Show Here Today community. The cost is only $10 for a lifetime membership. We are an APS-affiliated club. Listen to the end credits for information on joining. This is Cash.
This is Mark.
This is Jim.
And we got an email from Joseph W. Says, Cal. I guess he meant Cash, but nobody, you know.
Nobody ever gets that right.
Nobody ever gets it. You seem to be looking for topics to keep the show interesting and varied. I think we gave up on that a long time ago. Yeah. I thought it might be interesting for you to go through the back of the book section, one item per show, and do a little segment explaining why each stamp exists. I'm sure people would find it interesting to understand why there was a consular fee stamp, a potato tax stamp, for example. And, you know, he's absolutely correct.
Yeah, let's start with airmails.
Okay. Why did they have an airmail stamp?
Well, in the beginning, they sent stamps by truck. They sent mail by truck.
Actually, I think it was like, originally it was horses on the back. The first airmail, the first postage service is supposedly the one that Genghis Khan set up to move mail.
Elephant mail?
I think it's like Oso mail or Osu mail or something like that. Anyway, so let's see. Let's not talk about airmails. Airmails are boring. What? How about potato stamps?
Potato stamps. That's my specialty.
It is.
Yeah.
Well, go ahead. Why did they issue potato stamps?
Well, interesting. Potato tax stamps were issued. There was a Potato Act of 1935. I suspect that this was to punish Idaho farmers for some reason.
Yep.
But it was an amendment to the Agricultural Adjustment Act that became effective in 1935. This was during the Depression, and this was during the first Roosevelt administration where they were trying to control supply and demand. So the potato growers were given allotments that they could provide tax-exempt potato stamps. And then the growers, if they exceeded that allotment, would have to pay for the excess with the tax-paid potato stamps at the rate of 3/4 cents per half pound. So that, therefore, you have these fractional stamps that were issued. And if you look back in the revenue section of the catalog, of the specialized catalog, you'll find that there was just two issues. Well, that's because in 1936, like in January, so it was just 3 or 4 months later, or less than that, the Supreme Court declared it unconstitutional, the whole act of the Agricultural Adjustment Act, unconstitutional. So basically, even though they had the potato stamps out there, everybody just kind of ignored it after the Supreme Court ruled.
No.
And then Congress finally repealed the act, which was kind of interesting that they would repeal an act that was unconstitutional after they passed it. Sounds like bureaucracy to me. Anyway, the bottom line is that we have like, I don't know, 17, 18 issues of potato stamps.
Interesting. So you can...
And I suspect that they're not listed except for one value, two values, as used.
Oh, how much did they catalog used?
Well, there is a 2-pound black, blackish brown, just a numeral, it says 2 pounds on it, $37.50 is catalog price. And then there was a booklet of those, a booklet of 12. If that's used, it's $375. And then they have also the 50-pound issue of that same issue that is used at $50. But well, they're like $1 catalog value otherwise.
Yeah, I'm going to kind of guess, too, that they were probably pen canceled because they were probably applied to some sort of a receipt or something like that. Does it say, look in the catalog, does it say anything about the cancellation types or anything?
No.
Because it seems to me that anybody with a split nib pen and some 1930s ink could cancel these to their heart's content.
They were supposed to be used between December 1st, 1935, and January 6th, 1936, when the Supreme Court declared the law unconstitutional. So they would have only been used for a month.
Yeah.
And they were supposed to be used to pay the, if you exceeded your allotment, how you paid the tax.
It was clearly a punitive tax to control the output of potatoes.
It was a collectivization of the, I shouldn't say that, right?
Well, they did the same thing. That's the purpose of the marijuana stamps.
Yeah.
Is the marijuana stamps, nobody was going to pay tax on their marijuana. With one exception, there was a university either in Alabama or Louisiana. Maybe it was Mississippi. It was one of those three states. And they paid the tax because they were doing marijuana and cannabis research. And so they were like under the gun and everything, but nobody else was going to pay the tax. It's not like you go to your corner drug dealer and go, hey, give me a lid. And for those young listeners, a lid is how they used to measure marijuana. And he'd go, oh, hold on. Let me put the tax stamp on this.
That's right.
So it was a way that they said, oh, you have marijuana. We're not going to bust you for the marijuana. Don't care. You didn't pay the tax, and we're going to throw you in jail for that. We're going to come down hard because we can enforce a tax much easier than we can enforce the marijuana. Because marijuana, you know, you say, well, it's not mine or whatever. But you have marijuana without a tax stamp on it, it means you're breaking the law. So it was a way for them to enforce the law without enforcing the law. It's like, you know, Al Capone went to, he didn't go to jail for murder or for running the mafia or anything. He went because he did tax fraud. He didn't pay taxes on all his illegal gains. It's like, oh, okay.
Yeah, the money was illegal, but you didn't pay tax on it, so therefore we're throwing you in jail.
Yeah.
Which I want to know what the properties of the potato were that it warranted a tax stamp on it if marijuana was taxed in a similar manner.
Well, they did the same thing with the margarine and oleo butter stamps.
Oh, yes.
It was a way to control the market.
Well, the Bureau did have some fun with that issue with the potato tax stamp. RI-1 through RI, was it 13? It's a very colorful set.
Yes.
You know, very attractive, but it's basically just a collectible. It's not, you know, they didn't really use it for their intended purpose.
Oh, I have a question. Look in the catalog. What does it say underneath it? For the design, does it say who the girl is?
Well, there's a young woman.
Yes.
That's what they call.
Oh, it's just young woman.
Just generic.
I'm going to guess Miss Idaho. It's a good guess.
Yeah, it's a colorful stamp. It's a long stamp, and on top of it, it has the number of pounds, and on the bottom it says U.S. Revenue, and in the middle it's got a picture of a girl.
Yep.
And it's comes in different colors for the different denominations, so like you say, it's a very attractive set.
Yeah, as opposed to the set they did the next year, which was
black.
Black, you know, black grayish and black, and, you know, more you know, perfunctory, you know, workman-like stamp.
Well, hopefully now all our listeners know about the 1930s potato market.
There you go.
So, Mark, what crossed your desk?
Well, I was at the show in St. Louis, and I spent, again, a lot of money there, way more than I planned to. But I was able to fill three empty spaces in my revenue collection that I didn't have before. So that was really
cool.
Wow.
How many spots are you at now?
It's coming down to the point where my want list is Richard Friedberg calls it the impossible list. but from Richard, I got an RD-362, which is a 1951 $2,500 stock transfer stamp, and that, which is a real rarity. And I also got an RF-8, which is the playing card stamp. It's the key stamp to the playing card set.
I know that stamp. I collect those stamps.
Yeah, it's the 7 CTS period reading up or reading down, but I have the reading up version.
That'll be an interesting one, playing card stamps.
Yeah.
We'll talk about that next week.
And then a local dealer, Ron McVeigh, he kind of, you know, gravitates a lot toward Match and Medicine, and I was able to get a valuable experimental silk stamp from him, RS-253E, cats $1,500. And lately, for some reason, the experimental silks in revenue, in the match measure revenues, have been just shooting up in value. So I'm not sure what the impetus is behind that. Maybe people are finally recognizing how scarce they really are. But then one additional stamp that I got from Dennis O'Brien, who's also a local to Missouri, is a Philippines 471. That's the 6-cent dark green with the Victory purple Victory overprint.
The Victory overprint.
But although this one is an earlier version, I think it might be before the thing broke, before the stamp broke. So I'll have to, you know, I'll submit it and we'll see what happens. But
well, the break that you're talking about, first of all, it's everybody calls it the Victory overprint. It's actually the Vic, and then pause for a fraction of a sentence and say Tory.
Right.
Because it actually was two pieces of rubber that made it. And the way you expertize it is that it really is sort of two, it's a VIC, and then it was a TORY, and they sort of kind of fit together, but not really well.
Yeah.
And when they were put together, nobody knows really what was going on or anything, but the T of Victory broke in the middle. It's got, it looks like it has like a little rat chew out of the middle of it. And that happened after the beginning. So you have them where it says Victory, and then you have them where it says Victory with a little bite out of the T.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the fakers said, oh, well, if we put that little bite in there, then everybody will know it's real. Because when you look at it and there's no bite mark there, everybody thinks it's fake. And it's like, no, it's... And again, this is a stamp that I hate, but I am coming around to it.
Yeah.
So I'm probably going to be an expert on this stamp.
Eventually.
Yeah.
But yeah, Dennis O'Brien is also has a lot of possessions, you know, possession stamps. That, you know, but
like Palau, all the plate blocks.
Yeah, right. But he's got a lot of the common values, but he has a lot of them in a variety of conditions. So, you know, if you're looking for a, you know, Philippines or Canal Zone stamps that, you know, maybe only catalog a few bucks and, you know, normal dealers wouldn't have them, Dennis has them and he has them in quantity.
Good.
So, he's got to look up, you know, if you want to fill your spots in your possession albums.
In my opinion, and this is just my opinion, it's based on supply and demand. Really, really low supply, but also really, really low demand. You have cheap stamps that might only catalog a dollar or two that you just cannot find. Nobody has them.
Yeah.
Because they are incredibly rare, but what's also incredibly rare is somebody who cares.
Right.
And I was looking at Puerto Rican wine stamps or liquor stamps. What are they called? Wine stamps or liquor stamps? I forget which one. But mostly it's on rum.
Spirits,
I think. Yeah, spirit stamp. Spirit. Okay. Mostly they're rum. And so I like collecting the cancels of the various distilleries and vineyards for the wine stamps and stuff. And you can't find them. And you'll look them up in the catalog, and the catalog's 45 cents. It's like, well, yeah, 45 cents. Go ahead and try to buy one. You can't. They're nowhere. Yeah, who has them?
There's probably somebody that has a safe deposit box full of them.
Somewhere. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's, you are probably correct. They just hoarded all
hoarded
of them.
Hoarded them up, yep.
They'll open some banker's box when some dealer dies and find 25,000 of this stamp.
Right.
And he soaked up the market.
And you're like, oh, that's why they're only.
Yeah.
Let's see, just out of curiosity, I would look it up in the catalog here.
Yeah, but the St. Louis show is kind of a major show. You know, it's kind of, you know, right off the airport there. There's not a whole lot around, but there's a Waffle House right next door. So I always get breakfast at Waffle House and then go into the show.
That was on my bucket list. I satisfied that a while ago. Now everybody's going to say, they're either going to say, what the hell is Waffle House, or why the hell do you want to eat there?
Right.
So the overprinted wine stamps are the ones you're talking about. It's rectified spirits.
A rectified spirits.
That's the Puerto Rico stamp.
Yeah.
And you're right. They're not, they don't, well, you know, they're moderately priced, the $20, $30 on some of them and 80 cents on others.
Yeah.
You know. But yeah, you don't see them very often.
I collect them and I hardly see them at all.
Yeah.
I had the same thing. I was collecting Nepal and Afghanistan. And Nepal, I sold both collections. Very, very, did very well on them. But Nepal, very, very hard to get stuff. Afghanistan, impossible. Literally impossible. Go to a stamp show and look for stamps of the early lions from Afghanistan. Just, you know, hi, do you have any Afghanistan lions? You'll go to 10 stamp shows, and finally one person will say, oh, yeah, I think I have one.
Right.
It's like, you know, finding inverted Jennies is easier.
Probably so, more of them.
Yeah. So, yeah, it I'm an economist. Everybody who listens to this should know that. It is supply and demand. And that demand sneaks up sometimes and makes a stamp incredibly cheap that you cannot find and is incredibly scarce. So, Jim, what crossed your desk?
Well, I had a 3-cent Z grill come across my desk. This is the 85C in the Scott's catalog.
Is it known for the zigzag pattern?
We discussed that last week, didn't we?
Yeah, last week there was an article. Listen to last week's show if you want to get that joke.
Yep. So anyway, the difference between a Z-grill and an E-grill. Now, keep in mind that the number or the letter has nothing to do with the grill itself. It's just a way that they've designated it. Okay. But the difference between a Z-grill and a more common E-grill 3-center, number 88, is 1 millimeter in height. 1 millimeter. So I'm trying to measure this grill on the back of this stamp down to a millimeter. So it's. I guess what I'm saying is that there's probably an awful lot of E-grills out there that might be Z-grills, and there may even be some Z-grills that are E-grills, because it is really the measurements. Right. And if you count the points, which sometimes is hard to do because you can't always see the points completely, but the points are 14 by 15 or 14 or 15 by 17 or 18 for the Z-grill. And then for the E-grill, it's 14 by 16 to 18. Well, wait a minute. I'm looking at this. I'm saying, that could measure the same number of points.
Yep.
Yeah.
But the Z-grill is a horizontal grill.
Yes.
So, and this is one of the points of irritation that I have on the Micarelli, the newest edition of Micarelli that they're selling. They show a picture, they describe it in the Micarelli, and then there's a picture where they show and this is what it should look like, a Z grill, and this is what it should look like, you know, the regular grill. And in the newest version, they swapped the pictures.
Yeah.
The text is the same, but the pictures are swapped.
So, you stole my thunder, bud.
Yeah.
So after I do all that, then I look at it and I say, well, this looks like a vertical grill. That would be the e-grill.
Right.
Right? So I guess the point is that when you think you have a Z grill, look very carefully at the little slit at the top of the at the point.
And we'll describe it. Well, basically,
it's kind of like a V at the top, a V at the bottom, with a line between it.
Well, how I describe it is: picture a E grill as an X.
Yes. Okay.
And a Z grill as two Ys with their bottoms connected. So it's like an X with a line between it, two Ys. And that's how you tell a Y from a Z grill from an E grill. And there are
the
a
Z couple is of horizontal.
People, yeah, there are a couple people who have found several 2-cent Z grills. Because people just don't know, it's not really the size of the grill, it's that it was a different plate being used.
Yeah.
And the pyramids on this are not really pyramids, they're more like roofs, you know, like the roof of a house versus the point of a pyramid.
Yeah, it would actually be the roof of the green Monopoly house.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be it. And so the vertical one is you know, when you have it, you know, turn that way, and then if you turn it 90 or 45 degrees, then that would be your horizontal.
Yep.
And the horizontal, I'm sorry, the vertical one is the Z grill,
mm-hmm.
and the horizontal is the A.
Is really kind of any.
I'm sorry, is an E.
Yeah, and, but all of them have that.
Yeah. And
except for a Z grill.
And the problem with it is like, the problem with it is that the pictures got switched in the Micarelli, and I'm looking at it, and I say, well, wait a minute. I've got notes, you know, in my notes. They call it the opposite way.
Anybody who goes to stamp shows and, you know, visits dealer tables, if you want to make money, there are things that you should look for. One of them is Z grills, and particularly on the 2-center, it turns a $60 stamp into a $2,250 stamp, and they're out there to be found. You know, spend $25 and get the Micarelli book and be able to differentiate a Z grill from a regular grill, and you will make money. Another one, like we always talk about, is number 491s. You know, being able to pick out a 491 is not that tough when you know the color of the paper. It's like, you know, they describe everything and go, oh, you know, this is the toga rope and, you know, these other places. And the watermark is like, yeah, but the first thing you need to do is look for the paper.
Yeah.
Well, what crossed my desk was when I was driving in to work to get to my desk, I noticed that gasoline here in the Las Vegas Valley is over $4 a gallon. And this hasn't happened for a really, really super long time. And I've been talking about inflation and the stamp market and what I expect and things like that. And I think we've kind of hit a pivot point. I suspected that we would be here a year and a half to 2 years ago. But it's just, you know, things have been not really manipulated, but controlled. Because, you know, the government doesn't like inflation. They don't like having pissed off people. So that which should have happened or would have happened like 18 months ago, I think you're starting to see now. And if this continues, it's just going to be too much for the government to really hide. So you're going to start seeing inflation creeping back up. Everybody says it's going up. Everybody says we're going into a recession now. I mean, everybody. Well, why do stamp collectors care? And the whole thing is that when you have cash, you don't want to have cash. So you're going to be buying stuff. And you're going to be buying stuff that you can invest in. And so people invest in real estate, but it costs, what, $400,000 to buy a house? So that's kind of off the table.
Yeah, plus the interest rates.
Yeah.
For the mortgage rates is really high.
But buying a $1,000 stamp or a $1,000 coin or a $1,000 baseball card or a $1,000 comic book, all the collectibles are going to be sort of a safe haven that money is going to flow into. And the two biggest collecting interests in the world are coin collecting and stamp collecting. And while coin collecting is going to get more of the money, stamp collecting is going to get its fair share. And like I've said before, you know, we've been seeing this now for quite a while. But we've been seeing, you know, 10, 15% increases. I think going forward, we're going to start seeing more than 20% increases again. And it'll be very interesting to see what happens. I do not suspect that a lot of this will be talked about on the news and stuff until after the election, because there are interests which do not want to talk about a bad economy before an election. But after the election is over, I suspect that the stamp market is going to be dramatically impacted by a realization of inflation. So we will see what happens. I'm actually recording this. So, you know, on November 7th, everybody can point to me and call me an idiot, or or I can claim that I'm some super genius.
Right.
One or the other. It's a coin flip either way.
Yep. It's almost always the former, but this time it'll be the latter.
And on that note, keep collecting.
We need your help. Nothing on the internet is free, including our phone and internet connections. So you can support the podcast by joining the Stamp Show Here Today Club. The cost is $10 for a lifetime membership. Please include your APS member number, as we are an APS affiliated club. Your support is greatly appreciated. Our brand new spanking address is 5965 Harrison Drive, Suite 6 in Las Vegas, Nevada, 89120.
You left out the word glorious.
Fabulous.
Because you don't put that on the letter.
Oh. Well, you could.
You could, yeah.
You could, yeah.
Well, kids, that's all the time we have for today. I'd like to thank Sideshow Mel, Corporal Punishment, Gina Ballerina, Owen from Knot's Landing, Miss Donna Mills. Oh, she was a sport. We've had lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of fun, but now the time has come to go. If this silkworm was found dead in his bed tomorrow, I'd be in heaven still doing this show. See you some other time!
Stamp collecting happens when we dream together.